The headlines: the death toll in Gaza nears 33,900 as intense Israeli attacks claim dozens of more lives. U.S. police make arrests as Google workers protest Gaza genocide in their company's contract with Israel. And also in our headlines, the Iranian president says his country's punitive military action against Israel was limited and calculated. Hello and welcome, everybody. More deaths and destruction in Gaza, where the Israeli regime continues its intense attacks against civilians.
Like the rest of Rafah residents, we were shocked when an Israeli rocket hit a house of displaced people. My sister's son-in-law, her daughter, and her children were having dinner when an Israeli missile demolished their house over their heads.
I woke up to the sound of girls shouting mama and children calling each other's names. I came running and found children coming out running. We were stumbling upon bodies of martyrs, with body parts and corpses scattered all over the place, inside the shop and out there.
At least 13 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza City. They are among 56 people killed in the past 24 hours. The total death toll from the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza now stands at nearly 33,900. Most of the victims are women and children. The Gaza health system has almost collapsed as hospitals are main targets of the attacks. Meanwhile, almost the entire population of Gaza is struggling to get access to food amid Israeli restrictions on humanitarian aid into the besieged territory. Moving on, Israel's months of genocide and war on the Gaza Strip has not only left tens of thousands of Palestinians dead, but displaced more than 1.7 million others. Most displaced people are in Rafah, a southern city that remains under constant threats of an Israeli invasion. People there say that a ground operation in Rafah will leave them nowhere to go. Let's hear the reaction of a few of them.
It will be a huge problem if ground invasion takes place in Rafah. You can see more than 1.5 million people in Rafah. Where can they go? We can barely find space for each other. Every tent hosts 6, 4, or 3 families instead of one. The least you can find is 2 families inside a tent.
Of course, we are scared, terrified, and whoever says he's not afraid is lying. We can't go anywhere. Mawasi refugee camp can't take more people, neither Rafah. Geographically, it can't take more. We are really worried.
My husband is in Hebron, and I have no one, only me and my children. We are scared if an invasion takes place in Rafah. Where can we go? We are more than 20 people. I really dream about going back to my home. I wish I can go back to my apartment, even if it is rubble now. I'll stay in a tent there, but at my place. We are emotionally devastated.
For me, it's a great tragedy. My children are emotionally unstable because we were hit by an F-16 in Gaza. My husband was martyred in the beginning of the war. We fled to Khan Yunis. We didn't get to stay for a month and a half. Israeli forces dropped leaflets on us, and the whole area where I was staying was damaged. Again, we fled to Rafah, but there's no way to go after that. Where can we go? My children are devastated all the time.
Dozens of employees of the American tech giant Google have demonstrated in front of the company's building, demanding the end of cooperation with the Israeli regime over its massacre of Palestinians.
Free Palestine!
We demand that Google drop Project Nimbus, the $1.2 billion contract between them and Israel. We demand that Google protect their Arab, Muslim, and Palestinian worker voices from harassment, retaliation, suppression. And we demand that Google recognize Project Nimbus as a workplace safety and health concern.
Several protesters detained as they were demonstrating on Tuesday in Sunnyvale, California. Employees demanded the cancellation of Google's $1.2 billion contract with Israel for a project known as Nimbus. The project is part of Israel's agreement with Amazon and Google to provide cloud computing facilities to the regime and its army. Demonstrators criticized Google for the lack of transparency in announcing the details of the contract. They also said that the Israeli army is using artificial intelligence to kill Palestinians in Gaza. This is not the first time anti-Israel demonstrations are held in the U.S. On Tuesday, a group of pro-Palestine activists blocked the iconic Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco for hours in solidarity with people in war-torn Gaza. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has issued a statement in reaction to the reports about the Israeli regime torturing dozens of Palestinian detainees before releasing them on Monday.
The horrific testimonies documented by a large number of Palestinians recently released by the Zionist occupation army, including children as young as 12 years old, which confirmed their exposure to various types of torture, ill treatment and deprivation of health care, is an affirmation of the brutality of this criminal army and the violations it commits against defenseless civilians within the framework of war crimes and genocide against our people in the Gaza Strip.
The statement came after Gaza's Crossings Authority released testimonies of some 150 recently freed Palestinian detainees uncovering their painful ordeal. During detention, it called on international human rights bodies to take action to reveal the fate of thousands of Palestinians kidnapped during the Israeli raids across the Palestinian territories. Israeli forces have intensified their violent raids across the occupied West Bank since early October when the regime launched its war on Gaza. Several towns and villages across the occupied territories, including Nablus and Al-Khalil, have witnessed fresh Israeli incursions. The regime's soldiers also made multiple arrests during the raids, which have become daily occurrences. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with more details.
The Israeli forces raided Al-Khalil city and stormed the homes of two Palestinian prisoners, Ahmed and Mahmoud Zidat. And those are prisoners the Israeli military accuses them of carrying out an anti-Israeli operation in Ra'anana, led to the killing and the injury of Israeli soldiers back in January. The Israeli troops destroyed the homes of those two Palestinian prisoners. And during this operation in Al-Khalil, the Israeli forces opened fire towards Palestinians and fired tear gas. And a number of Palestinians had suffocated due to inhaling tear gas. Of course, the Israeli forces stormed the village of Beni Naim and arrested at least nine Palestinians there, where exchange of fire and the clashes have taken place between the Palestinians and the Israeli forces. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, the Israeli troops this time had raided the town of Aqraba, as well as Tul Karim and the town of Hable, south Falqilia. A number of Palestinians had been arrested in these areas, in addition to storming several neighborhoods and towns in Nablus and around the city of Nablus. And according to the Palestinians, to the Palestinian Commission of Prisoners Affairs, a number of Palestinians had been also arrested in these areas, including ex-prisoners and Palestinian activists, in addition to the fact that people from all walks of life are being arrested by the Israeli forces, including children and women. At least 15 Palestinians and more had been arrested this morning across the occupied West Bank. Today, behind bars, there are over 9,200 Palestinians. Over 3,200 of them are being held under the administrative detention. This means that people are behind bars without charge or trial. They don't know why they had been arrested by the Israeli forces, but yet it's another collective punishment being practiced by the Israeli regime.
Tensions have been flaring up between Israel and Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement since the Gaza war began. Both sides keep exchanging fire along the southern Lebanese border. In the latest attacks, Israeli warplanes bombed several villages and towns. Hezbollah also retaliated by firing a barrage of rockets at Israeli military bases located in the occupied territories. Our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh, joined us earlier with more details.
because you see Hezbollah definitely not tolerating any of the Israeli shelling. They're definitely hitting back right away. We saw early in the morning there was a strike using a Burkan rocket, and the Burkan rocket not only causes a lot of destruction, it is something that has been said by the Israelis to cause destruction and also a lot of mayhem and a lot of terror basically throughout the Galilee region, since it does cause the sirens to sound in that area. Hezbollah stated in their statements that they targeted the central command center for the 91st Division in the Bronit barracks. And only several minutes later, they also targeted that same barracks, but this time they targeted a recently established area where there are gatherings of soldiers near the Bronit barracks as well. This is considered one of the biggest barracks in the Galilee region. And even after that, we heard from the Israeli settlements or Israeli media saying that the sirens have sounded once more in the western Galilee, which is basically where that confrontation took place. Around midnight, Hezbollah also targeted a military vehicle for the Israelis that was entering the post of the Mutulle, which is just adjacent to the towns of Farkila and Khiyam. And they targeted that military vehicle. They said that they this led to scores of Israeli soldiers either killed or wounded from the Israelis. So these were the very significant operations. Let's not forget the Israelis also continue their shelling of Kfar Kila Khiyam, also Aita Shab and Alma Shab, which was a very shelling that we saw. This is one of the towns that is not usually targeted by the Israelis. There was heavy shelling in Alma Shab. And we also saw yesterday, of course, the assassination that took place and led to the killing of also the civilians in the vicinity. And so they're definitely, the Israelis are targeting areas where there are civilians, where civilians have not evacuated, areas that are further away from the borders.
Iran's president says a reprisal attack launched on the Israeli military targets in the occupied territories was a calculated move.
The Iranian military punished and reined in the Israeli regime. This shows Iran's power. Today, the whole world admits that what the Iranian armed forces did with the wise Islamic Revolution leader's prudence was not only a true promise coming true, but also a precise and calculated move. Today, it is being acknowledged by the world leaders. It was an extremely calculated move.
President Raisi made the comments in a ceremony in Tehran marking National Army Day. He said that Iran's operation shattered the Tel Aviv regime's hollow power. He said the punitive action was taken on a limited scale just to punish the regime, but if it were a full-blown operation, he added, nothing would have been left of the Tel Aviv regime. He also warned that Israel will receive a harsh response in case of the slightest act of aggression against Iran. The president said Iran's military might can bring security to the whole region. He underlined that hatred toward the United States and Israel, as well as support for the resistance front, has grown more than ever. Journalist and political analyst from Belgrade, John Bosnich, joined us with his take on Iran's reciprocal action against the Israeli regime over its recent attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria.
Israel's strike on the Iranian consulate was a strike at Iran, and under international law, Iran had the right to respond. So in these sequence of events, Iran has followed international law and Israel has not. And this cannot be stressed enough. We also know that these events did not come from nowhere. Israel has been conducting an indiscriminate mass killing that includes tens of thousands of civilians. And the response around the world, not just from Iran, is that Israel is committing what amounts to a genocide under the definition set down by the United Nations and international law. It couldn't be more clear. If you're not producing your own military defenses, you are always vulnerable to external attack. And now with the power projection that Iran has demonstrated by the bombardment of Israeli airspace, in effect, Iran has now warned Israel that the game is over. There's no longer one great giant who can crush anybody in the region, and it's going to have to be some kind of relationship that's based on respect for the sovereignty of other peoples. Israel tells America what to do in Israel's interests through their Israel lobby inside the U.S. Congress. So we're seeing a weakening of U.S. support for Israel. We're seeing a weakening of regional support for Israel. And we're seeing a worldwide swell of anger over the indiscriminate killing of tens of thousands of innocent civilians.
A senior Iranian military commander says homegrown munitions and military hardware were put on display on National Army Day. In an interview with the Arabic language Al Alam News Network, Brigadier General Qumar Seydari gave the details of the defense equipment showcased. He said drone and missile capabilities, armor-piercing equipment, smart weapons with pinpoint accuracy, and breakthroughs in the field of electronic warfare were among the products paraded in ceremonies marking National Army Day. Haydari then touched upon Iran's reprisal attack on Israeli military targets in the occupied territories. He said the operation was conducted a few days after Israel's terrorist attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus only due to political considerations. The general warned that Iran will respond in less than an hour if its interests are targeted again. The Iraqi people and leaders have hailed Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel, which came amid the Tel Aviv regime's war on Gaza. They say the attack was legitimate and within rights to self-defense after the failure of the international community to condemn the deadly Israeli strike on Iran's consulate. Muslim Salim reports from Baghdad.
After days of anticipation, Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The legitimate response came after Israel attacked Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, violating all international laws and conventions.
Iran's response comes within the international laws, specifically Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which gives Iran the legitimate right to defend its national security. The Iranian attack on Israel has changed the geopolitical map in the region, and it was a strong warning to the evil regime.
The Iraqi people, as well as resistance leaders, hailed the Islamic Republic for the unprecedented response, dubbed Operation True Promise, which was within the inherent right of self-defense that entitles any country to protect its diplomatic institutions. Iran's retaliation came after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack, which killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps.
The resistance and the people of Iraq surely stand by the Islamic Republic of Iran amid the failure of international community and the UN Security Council to condemn the Israeli attack on the Damascus consulate. Iran had all the rights to defend itself and respond with proper means and timing.
The significant operation clearly shows that Iran will not hesitate to take action against any threat to its citizens and institutions. Now, with its capabilities and military evolution, Iran has significantly changed the rules of battlefield in modern times. Iran's retaliatory operation, which came after a long time of strategic patience in the face of Israeli's brutalities, shows that the Tel Aviv regime's days of hit and run are over. And Iran does not hesitate to exact a devastating revenge on its enemy, despite its all-out Western support. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
Well, that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
يعني
بازار
If you look around, nearly every object you see is made of raw material extracted from a mine. Basically, if you can't grow it, you have to mine it. The extraction of minerals, metals, and fuels from the ground is one of humankind's oldest industries. Never more than now has society been so dependent on greater variety and larger volumes of mined products. So it's no surprise that mining fuels our modern world and makes economies grow. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Alireza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we will be exploring the mining industry while shining the spotlight on the machinery used in this sector. We wanted to see what types of machines are used and who is actively manufacturing them. Plus, we wanted to understand why the mining sector is crucial to the national economy and how manufacturers contribute to its progress. So, let's roll out the show. Our quest for answers led us to Shahrud city in Semnan province, where we visited a company specializing in manufacturing various mining machines. With nearly 20 years of experience, this knowledge-based company is active in a host of fields. It conducts research, development, and production of equipment needed in various industries. That being said, it also manufactures a variety of excavating, drilling, trenching, and digging machines. The life of any product begins in the design room. This company has researched and developed these machines and has perfected their performance. Optimizing the machine size, speed, and power to carry out tasks has also reduced the expenses related to projects where these machines are used. These machines can be used in agriculture and road maintenance, among other medium-scale construction projects. Most materials needed to make these machines can be purchased inside Iran. Steel sheets, gears, wires, and whatever else is required to build the machine can be domestically found. And if a design requires a particular part, this company can make its own molds to create the parts. You might find it interesting that these machines are currently imported as there is a high demand among mining companies for equipment. So, indigenizing the production of mining machines has been a big step towards supporting this sector. Another benefit to local production is it saves the country millions by cutting back on imports. The beating heart of this knowledge-based company is its research and development department. Here is where all the magic happens. This area employs some of the most talented and experienced specialists to research, design products, and optimize existing ones. But that's not all. The research and development department also studies future projects. This company also dabbles in making equipment used to harness renewable energy. This company not only uses its own expert staff, but also stays up to date on the latest knowledge by maintaining links with the Industrial University of Shahrud. It collaborates with academic institutions and exchanges knowledge with them too. Furthermore, this knowledge firm also uses capacities and resources made available by Semnan Tech Park. Among its services, it offers the execution of projects through contracting. For example, it has used its machines to complete piping and installation of telecommunications manholes for intercity networks. Another example is carving drainage systems in agricultural fields using its trenchers. Over the years, this company has made a variety of award-winning machines, such as drilling machines equipped with fiber optic lights. Moreover, this company has invented 6 products that have been internationally patented. This knowledge-based manufacturer has never stopped eyeing the future and has plans to expand its production units and product portfolio in the coming years. The company we just mentioned is part of the puzzle that helps Iran's mining sector thrive. It is one of Iran's key industries, as the country is one of the top 10 mineral-rich nations globally. Roughly 7% of global mineral reserves can be found in Iran, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world. Numbers from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show that last year the sector saw a growth in exports. Government officials, however, say export figures could still be much higher. Furthermore, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized production, such as mining machines, in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. Okay, time for me to take a little break from here and divert your attention to a report that I made earlier in the week. Hey everyone, welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. Today we are discussing energy production, specifically electricity production through gas turbines and some of the problems that come with it. So at different times of the year, mainly during the summer, we get sporadic blackouts at one of the peak hours, let's say around 12 at noon until 4 to 5 p.m. Because we cannot store electricity, electricity production must always match electricity consumption. But because of the temperature during these hours, during this time of the year, during the summer, high temperatures in particular, negatively affect electricity production through gas turbines. So first we're going to take a look at, well, why that is and how gas turbines work. And also, we believe that we have found a solution at Sharif Innovation Center, in one of the companies that has made that solution, and we're going to check that out too. Why do high temperatures negatively affect the performance of a gas turbine? Well, bear with me as I try to explain how a gas turbine works through this prototype that they have here. This is the prototype of the device that would be used at scale. This is not at scale. So imagine this is the gas turbine. How it works is that it sucks air through these air ducts, and the temperature of that air is very important. I'm going to get back to that. The air goes through a compressor here. The compressor compresses the air, which we would need the compressed air for the combustion chamber. A combustion chamber essentially makes this work exactly like a plane engine or a car engine. A car engine is slightly different because the movement that it produces is linear, whereas the plane engine has rotary movement. So that's exactly what it is like, because it produces rotary movement. So in the combustion chamber, we add a certain type of gas to the compressed air, and then a little spark creates an explosion, and the explosion, the high pressure air, would then spin our turbines. And the turbines, which have movement in them, are connected to a generator, and the generator's job is to turn movement into electricity, which goes through the power grid and then gets to whoever needs it. Now, the thing here, the important thing about the air temperature is that we need ideal conditions, ideally, for the machine to work at peak performance. And that ideal condition is at sea level 15 degrees Celsius. So the air, ideally, is 15 degrees Celsius, but we don't get that kind of temperature in a lot of places, especially in a hot and dry climate. So
We have a couple of options to alleviate that problem. Number one, the inefficient option is to work the compressor a lot more, which would use a lot more energy, but that's not even the issue. The issue is that there's a lot easier of a way. So what they have found at TEPCO company is that they have instead tried to use an ice storage unit to work as a thermal storage compartment, because the thermal storage capacity of ice is 100 times more than that of the water. So here they create ice essentially at midnight until the morning when no one is using the power and the air is colder, because that is what happens. The difference between temperatures during the day and temperatures during the night in dry climates is pretty massive. So it's a lot easier to create the ice during that time. So they do that so that in the morning or at noon during peak hours, 12 p.m. to like 4 or 5 p.m., they have the ice to cool the water that is in the storage, and the cooled water goes through a radiator behind the air duct so that the air, the probably hot air that comes through the chamber, is cooled using the water that is in the ice storage compartment. That water cools the air down to like 15 degrees and gives us ideal conditions to work with. So the compressor doesn't need to work that hard. We get our ideal conditions through the ice storage unit. And that is how they are able to offset the amount of electricity that we would lose if we were to use the compressor a lot harder. And that's pretty much how a gas turbine works as well, but also this is the innovation here. A better way to cool the air and get a gas turbine to work at peak performance. There are other less efficient methods of cooling the water that comes through the chamber. Both of them are called evaporative cooling. The first type is done through a wet media, most likely a cooling pad that you see in water coolers everywhere. So how it works is that there is a lot of surface and they run water through it, and the air is going to go through this cooling pad. So as the air goes through the cooling pad, the water absorbs the heat from the air and evaporates. Evaporation is an endothermic procedure, which is heat absorbing, which means that the heat is absorbed from the air and transferred to the water, which evaporates, making the air that runs through the cooling pad a lot cooler. This is a rather wasteful method because, well, you're using water, because in the method that I showed you, you don't use water. The water is just circulated back into the system. This one, you use water, and it's just generally not that efficient. The other method is even more inefficient. You see it in a lot of places in like outdoors restaurants. They spray water through the air that is going to go through the chamber, and the extremely tiny water droplets absorb the heat from the air and evaporate as they are sprayed. This also absorbs heat from the air, and that is why when you go through the spray of water, you feel a cool breeze, because the air is a lot cooler, because its heat is transferred to the water molecules. So both of these methods are pretty inefficient, and I just wanted you to know about other methods that are used, but they are definitely more inefficient. And the chart is a demonstration of how our thermal storage system would perform in an actual 400 megawatt hour power plant system. When the ice is getting used during in midday, it bumps up the production by a difference of 60 megawatts in a regular 400 megawatt hour power plant. All right, now it's time for me to take a little break here and hand it over to my good friend out in the field, who's prepared a report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy. God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find the stress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out. Felt, or so-called Namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with Felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when Diva was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of these disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution. And we reached the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions: why, how, and what. Why is to define the problem. How is the process towards the solution. And what is the final product and prototype. These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space. All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is this phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's this whole thing, we call it desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. People and employees put it in their on their desk to divide their own workplace with the person right next to them.
We have three different kind of material that we use on our works that absorb undesirable sounds, which are wool panels, or the other name is felt, and in Persian we say namat, and thermofelt and carpet. And the felt are in two kind of industrial felt and the natural felt. Natural felt is made by wools, and industrial material is made by a process by the battles and pet materials. They have different color patterns and thicknesses. The thicknesses are from 3 millimeter to 50 millimeter. And about the thermofelt, we have this material that we can use for more absorption. It has three kind of material with polyester, jeans, and heavy traffic, and it's very good for absorbing. And the last one is the carpet that is heavy traffic that we use in heavy traffic places such as the offices, and it can be cleaned very easy by the vacuum cleaner.
As I mentioned earlier, this idea was created based on the concept of recreating, recycling, and revitalizing the surrounding substances and generalizing this idea to the upcoming products with different potentials. Such small-scale products are intended to improve the mental and physical health of users. And finally, creating a comfortable, inviting atmosphere.
Just like this linear lighting, almost everything here is made of felt. Based on environmental psychology, this linear lighting has been created in a way to provide maximum visual and acoustic comfort in the workplace, especially a co-working space like this. This company, Namad Startup, has been trying to promote sustainability and also take steps towards industrialization. Among all the products here, there were so many things, but I decided to choose felt laptop case to carry my laptop with me wherever I go. So it's not about the ideas, it's about making the ideas happen. I've been Sarah Dema.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for tuning in. It's bye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد اینها چیزایی لازم نیست
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones
اما این کافی نیست
But it's not enough نقیم الدین ولا
تتفرقوا فیه مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers, sisters, listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. In this program, we look at a hadith from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam and sometimes verses from the Quran when they are available about matters of life. Now, previously, we have been talking about brotherhood and the rights our brothers have over us and what we need to give back to them. Among the rights of the brothers is that we need to give them the mental support. We need to help them not only in matters of finances, but in even matters that concerns them in terms of their mental health, specifically when it comes to praying for them, like giving them advice and so on and so forth. A hadith from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, he says, whoever wakes up in the morning and not caring about the affairs of the believers, then the Prophet said he is not a Muslim. Sometimes we get consumed by life itself and we get busy with my life and my work and this and that, and I forget to think about my brothers in faith. I forget to see what's happening with my brothers in faith. I forget to check the news. I forget to feel sorry for them. I forget to come to their help and aid, even just to pray for them. And especially now, we are going through hard times, especially with our brothers and our sisters in Palestine, in Palestine and in Gaza. They're suffering. And because now it's dragging, it's past the 150 days landmark, a lot of people in the Muslim world, they say, oh, okay, it's done, you know. We got fired up at the beginning, but now they just don't care anymore because it's been such a long time. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he says, no, you need to every day, man asbaha, whoever wakes up every morning. So every morning when you wake up, you say to yourself, what's happening to my brothers and sisters in faith? And he says, the Prophet says, if you don't do that, then you are not a Muslim. You're not one of them. وَمَنْ سَمَعَ رَجُلًا يُنَادِي, and when a person hears another person calling, يَا لِلْمُسْلِمِينَ فَلَمْ يُجِبْهُ فَلَيْسَ بِمُسْلِمٍ, when you hear a person calling you and he's saying, where are the Muslims? Where are those my brothers in faith to come and help me? And you don't help this call, you don't go and aid him, then again the Prophet says, then you're not a Muslim either. So even to that extent, when it comes to praying for them, understanding their problems, knowing their affairs, coming to their aids, are all part of my duty as a Muslim to another Muslim every single morning. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amiri, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih al-Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم حساب داره دعا هم داره ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام همونطوری که این رو گفته دارم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. We said we need to worry about the affairs of our brothers in faith. Also, we are required to go visit them when they get sick and they fall ill. This is one of our duty towards our brothers and sisters. We have a hadith from Imam al-Sadiq, salamullahi alayhi. He says, لِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ يَسْتَرِيحُ إِلَيْهِ. To everything, there's something that they get relieved by and they feel good by. وَإِنَّ الْمُؤْمِنِ. And surely the believing person, يَسْتَرِيحُ إِلَىٰ أَخِيهِ الْمُؤْمِنِ. He feels comfortable, relaxed, and relieved with his other brother in faith. Then the Imam says, كَمَا يَسْتَرِيحُ الطَّيْرُ إِلَىٰ شَاكِلِهِ. In the same way that birds will always mingle amongst their own. So when a brother is sick and you go visit him, he'll feel at ease, at peace. He will feel good. And then the Imam salamullah alayhi, in another hadith, he says, whoever goes visits his brother for the sake of Allah, لَا لِشَيْءٍ غَيْرَهُ. Not for anything else. Not to seek his needs and ask, you know, for things and stuff like that. No, no, no. He just goes to visit him for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. بَلْ لِإِلْتِمَاسِ مَا وَعَدَ اللَّهُ. Just to seek that which Allah has promised. In what? Because Allah has promised that if you go visit a sick person, 70,000 angels would be calling this person who goes visits his other brother who is sick. They say to him, may you be blessed and bless the heaven that you will go to. The angels will say to this person, bless you, you are blessed, and bless the heaven that you will go to. So in another sense, Allah is trying to reward those who visit their brothers in faith when they are sick with heaven, which is quite lofty for just going driving for a short time, spending half an hour with a brother in faith who is sick. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he says in a hadith, a person was going by, or a king was driving by or walking by, and he saw a man standing at another man's door while the man of the house is not there. So the king said to him, what are you doing at this door? What brings you here? He says, I have a brother in this house and I came to visit him. قال رحم ماسه بينك وبين ام نزعت الي حاجه. The person that you want to visit, is he a brother? You have a relationship with him, or do you have a need with him? And then it continues, because it's a long hadith. He said to him, no, I'm just coming. There is no relation between us, and there is no need that I come. I just came just to visit him for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he said that person was deserving of heaven just for doing so. So sometimes when it comes to our brothers and sisters, it's not only material, but sometimes the simple, easy things that they require the most, like visiting them, doing dua for them, or even answering their call when they need us. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.